Jackson, driven by truth. Broadcasting live from beautiful British Columbia, it's Roadkill Radio. And now, here are your hosts, Carrie Simpson and Terry O'Neill.
Hey, welcome back, Carrie.
Thank you, sir.
It's almost welcome back, Carter. Remember that one? Anyway, welcome back, Carrie.
Again.
Yes, right. Welcome back. Okay, good. How you been?
Super duper busy.
Yeah, yeah.
But all's good.
Yes, and I must say I've been kind of busy as well. Lots of different activities, helping out friends with some promotion, a Wikipedia entry. I talked to you about that before.
Yes.
I won't talk about it in any detail, but kind of making sure that's accurate and informative at the same time.
You know, I don't know if our viewers out there, Terry, understand how multi-talented you really are.
Well, I got time to dabble.
Oh,
that's what I do. Yes, right.
You can play.
I can dabble. That's right.
Oh, it's dabbling.
Dabbling. I told my wife the other day that I kind of at times, and my family, when my sons were there as well, I said sometimes I feel like a Victorian gentleman, because I have time to pursue scientific or journalistic or historical endeavors, and then I can go and, you know, walk around the grounds. And no, I don't have grounds or anything like that, but really I do have I'm in a position now because
various, you know,
circumstances that I have time to follow through on various projects.
And then when we come together here, I get to share in all your sort of gentlemanly pursuits, because you share them with
that's
me.
That's right. And you know, I'll share one
and
thing.
And I
with,
learn
well, here
amazing
is something.
Things.
Here is something that actually shocked me today. I could not believe this was happening. There was a report, a news report today, that said the proposed marriage between 85-year-old Hugh Hefner and 25-year-old Crystal Harris.
Wait, and you mean something around this story shocked you?
Has been called off amid reports of infidelity. I absolutely can't believe it.
How shocking.
But here's the real shocker. Here's the real shocker. It's not Hugh Hefner who's been accused of infidelity. It's little 25-year-old Crystal Harris.
Oh, my God.
I know. That's just a little...
Shocking.
shocking news.
Double
right.
Shocking.
Yes. Well,
26 shocks.
That's several hundred thousand volts of shock. We got a great show tonight.
We have a great show.
And later in the show, we're going to be talking with John Martin, professor of criminology at the University of the Fraser Valley. He's going to tell us why he wrote a recent column for the Abbotsford Times or News about why the Canadian Human Rights Commission and all human rights commissions in the provinces across Canada
should
be extinguished, destroyed, ended, put out of their misery.
And I was trying to think of the best word for that.
Obliterated. That's a good one, too.
Yeah.
That's right. Metaphorically blow them to hell. Metaphorically speaking.
Oh, come on.
Do we have to speak in metaphors
you know, on the Human Wrongs Commission?
That's right. And before that, before we get him on, I will lead into that by talking about my own personal concern regarding the Canadian Human Rights Commission and my long and very sad story. So far, not a happy outcome.
Well, this is
trying to get basic information out of the media office. And nothing yet. Nothing.
And this has kind of turned into a personal quest for you, Terry, hasn't it?
A personal quest. And I've got...
Behalf of all of you, I might add.
Yeah, well, of course. And I'd love to share it with you and out there and share
it
with the readers at the National
Post,
because I did write about this subject a couple of years ago. And all I'm attempting to do is do a simple follow-up on a complaint that was laid a couple of years ago, and they won't even answer me.
Stonewalled.
I'm shocked and appalled.
Oh, double shock night.
Now, apparently, sometime in that.
Well, where's our ka-ching, yes, ka-ching?
That's right. Shocked
right
and appalled.
Two shocks.
Two shocks, that's right.
What else has shocked you this week, Terry?
Well, I don't know what else has shocked me. There's always stuff that gets my attention. I just want to keep going through with the people we're going to be talking with today. Middle of the show, Sean Murphy is going to be on the phone.
Good
He's
guy.
With the Catholic Civil Rights League. He'll talk about the big controversy at the Burnaby School District, of course.
Well, and there's a big happening there tonight, of course, that, you know, there's rumors that the board is going to be voting on this rewritten policy. Of course, they haven't let anybody see the new draft of the policy.
That's not very democratic, is it? They're going to vote on something they haven't shared with the public yet?
And no public input to the rewording. And hopefully we'll get a call with an update. We do have people there that, you know, will fill us in on on the events now.
Yeah. Now, are they? Is the rumor that they are rewriting it to take into account some of the concerns that the people on this show have expressed, some of our guests have expressed, and you've expressed, and are they going to make it even tougher?
No, the sense I have gotten, Terry, from the rumor mill is that there's a few tweakings of the particularly offensive use of language, words like embed. Some of the issues around, you know, heterosexism is dangerous. You know, they thought it might be prudent to take that
term. Yeah, yeah. I know there were some really offensive. I mean, none of us here is saying, you know, well, it's okay to discriminate and hate and beat up and bully against any minorities at all.
Yep.
We're just saying truly respect people's differences. If somebody comes into this society with into the public square with a truly felt, a deeply held belief about the moral, about the sanctity of marriage, about the morality or immorality of premarital or any sort of homosexual sex or any other sort of sex that isn't in marriage, male, female, you got to be able to respect that. Respect the differences. This is the language that these guys use all the time. And certainly, it was certainly my reading and yours as well, that document that Burnaby was putting forward didn't truly respect the people that held traditional beliefs, and a great many people do.
Well, Terry,
they're trying
to
belittle and marginalize.
I think it actually went further than that. I think it outright discriminated against them. But the other issue to this is this policy truly about stopping cruelty within our schools? Because if that's the stated objective, then this policy isn't going to do it. The policy that they had in place did it, but it doesn't matter what kind of policy you have unless it's enforced. And enforcement was the issue, will continue to be the issue. As long as the unions don't allow teachers to patrol the schoolyards during lunch break and all the rest of it, those are the real
factors.
Well,
that's a good point.
Yeah.
And you know, speaking of schools, our first subject and our first guest will be here in a minute. By the way, that'll be Sean Murphy speaking about that. I did mention that Catholic Civil Rights League.
He's done a wonderful submission on this.
He really has.
Yeah.
And in just a few minutes, we'll be joined by Helen Ward, the president of Kids First, one of Kids First Canada, one of our favorite people. We are being motioned in some sort. Helen will be talking about the announcement today by Premier Christy Clark, that the provincial government will be spending an additional $800,000 to resurrect, and $800,000 annually over 5 years. So that's $4 million. Is my math right? Five times $800,000, $4 million.
On top of the 1.5 already spent.
To resurrect the Roots of Empathy project. And boy, oh boy, if there's anything that's that seems to be on its surface a feel-good kind of a thing, a good news kind of a thing, something that wouldn't be controversial, would be this Roots of Empathy program, co-funded by the Ministry of Children and Family Development and the Ministry of Education. You know, I did some research on the Roots of Empathy, and, you know, it's I actually went into Google today to try to find criticisms.
Wait,
of
I'm shocked.
Criticisms of the Roots of Empathy. Scholastic theses on the Roots of Empathy program. I couldn't find anything but the only one slight hint of one person that's sort of dealing with the empathetic approach of psychologists and how that could backfire. But in terms of the school-level Roots of Empathy program, it's got a tremendous amount of support. Yet, you've got some concerns. Helen Ward, another woman with a good head on her shoulders, like you. Not only a good head, but a beautiful head.
Ah, oh, Terry.
Lovely.
Now, how am I going to resist those kinds of compliments?
Have concerns as well. So I'm really interested to find out from you. Now, is Helen, you haven't got Helen yet. No, Helen's not here. So let me just...
Okay, but you know what, Terry? I want to just address an issue here,
sure.
Because, and this fits very much in with the Burnaby issue. And, you know, on my way here, I'm thinking, my goodness, you know, all these issues are going on in our public education system. It seems to be that this is the defined battlefield these days.
Yes.
On all of these fronts. But what was interesting about this is Premier Clark has made a very public statement that she will not interfere in the Burnaby School Board controversy involving policy 5.45.
Okay. All right.
Yet, what does she do yesterday? She sends out a big announcement about how she's going to go into Burnaby and, you know, promote this anti-bullying program province-wide. We're going to have an expansion of it.
Oh, that's right. And it was in a Burnaby school that she announced this.
In a Burnaby school.
Was that yesterday or was today? That was
yesterday.
Right. Now she said, I will quote her, children deserve to grow up without fear of bullying, and as Premier, I promise to provide programs to students that teach them core values like respect, kindness, and empathy. The Roots of Empathy program delivers on that promise and helps teach young people how to act towards each other. Bullying has no place in our schools, and parents deserve to know their children are safe in school. Roots of Empathy will help accomplish that goal. And it's an interesting subject. You know, in the research that I've done, and sort of common sense tells you this as well, that we humans are complicated beings, aren't we?
I thought I was rather uncomplex.
Oh, no.
What
well,
you see is you, what
oh,
you get.
Oh, no. Yeah. We're deeply complex, and it's in a good way. You know, it's on one hand, yes, we can be mean and selfish, but on the other hand, we all do have an empathetic. Only the most callous sort of psychopaths don't really experience empathy. Adam Smith, the guy who did all that free market writing, economist, free market analysis, before he did that, wrote a book about the charitable instinct, that essentially the empathetic instinct that runs through human beings. And it did a very close analysis of it. And certainly scientists and people see this in other species as well. Monkeys sometimes show empathy, and humans do naturally show empathy. I think the problem that people are seeing is in this society of ours that we are so so much not with farm girls like you who are got your hands in the dirt and got all your chickens are all close around you, your little babies. But in most people living in urban environments and hectic and their two parents working and all this stuff, regardless of what you think about right or wrong about that, it does lead to fewer connections, and it's easier for kids to go off on wrong tangents and dangerous tangents.
I think it's worse than that, Terry.
Yeah, okay.
I think, you know, what you're referring to is what I often call the domestication of the human race, you know, because we live in concrete jungles and all these unnatural beings. But I think there is a psychology that goes hand in hand with it. And if we're going to be talking about the issues of empathy, it goes to this. I mean, we start teaching little kids, and I'm going to address some of this out of the Roots of Empathy. But, you know, kids are put into daycare now, whether they want to be or not, you know. And this is, you know, so we're going to ignore the feelings of the child. We're going to not be empathetic. We're not going to show any response because we're going to put our interests ahead of the needs of children. And then we get then just let
and
me
then
go
all of
net.
A sudden you say, oh my goodness, they aren't empathetic because they've been taken. So we better have another program to put them. By the way,
well, wait a minute though. But it goes further than that. We also send this message, and I'm going to strike right on the heart of it to an issue that's near and dear to your heart, is that we're also told that children are disposable. So we can go and have abortions. You're supposed to ignore all those feelings of guilt and confusion and all the rest of it because it's a blob of tissue. Yet inside you're just in this vortex of confusion and all the rest of it. So you slam down your feelings because in your head you're being told these things. So we are being trained, and this is what I mean, the psychology of this. We are having the empathy, our natural inclinations, our natural instincts, our maternal instincts for women, paternal for fathers. I mean,
are being kind of ripped asunder.
Well, dismissed, discounted, disposed of, and told that they're wrong.
You know what? This reminds me of a psychiatrist named Dr. Philip Ney, who has written extensively, talked extensively about the sort of the deep, dark currents of abortion. And we're not talking about the readily observable psychiatric or social or health issues surrounding abortion. He's talking about what it does to all of society, and especially to children. The children who are born after one of their siblings has been aborted, it may not be a conscious thing, but slowly but surely the child grows up with this realization that he's a survivor. And somehow it's either they got survivor guilt or they know that their lives were disposable. And if their parents had chosen to, the parents could have chosen in an instant to take that child's life too. And knowing that, there's a tremendous sense of insecurity. Mm-hmm. So it would seem to me that exactly what you're saying does lead to that. So maybe you're onto something here. And this is going deep. Did you want to check on some? Helen Ward's supposed to be joining us. You want to double check the phone number?
No, actually, she was calling in. So, Helen, if you're listening, can you give us a call?
Yeah, please do, Helen.
And if not, I know we can carry this segment because I'm ready to go on this.
Okay. Yeah. Listen, before we do that, well, this is more more evidence to support the thesis that, works. What do you expect from children? Children are being kind of confused by throwing them into daycare or kindergarten too early or disrupting
their whole natural
and no wonder
needs.
They're needing these roots
Absolutely.
Of empathy thing. June 3rd, Vancouver Sun, page B3. Too much kindergarten is no fun at all. Guess what? The stuff we've been talking about in this show since we began 2.5 years ago? Is that really? full day kindergarten may be hurting the learning and personal development of some children, according to new research. Early results from a pilot study focusing on two classrooms in southwestern Ontario showed that teachers in regular school settings were often caught in the tension that exists between meeting curriculum expectations and teaching to student interests. What does that paragraph have to do with this first paragraph? Play-based learning builds on child. There's an emphasis on standardization like never before that's being pushed down on young children, says researcher Rachel Hayden. Maybe we should talk to her. This is something that's been created that doesn't exist elsewhere. It's an emphasis on standardization like never before. Hayden said the findings can't be generalized to every full-day kindergarten classroom, but the results do raise questions about whether the practice will help children in the long run. Ho, ho, ho! Hey, right?
Yeah.
There you go.
But well, let me say one word. Duh.
Yeah, okay.
You know,
well, I mean, said that and ho, 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 hey, yeah. Hey.
You know, this is, you know, and this is where I think, and this is what's coming across more and more, even with this, you know, $4 million, five-year plan that Premier Clark has given to the Roots of Empathy, Terry. You know, within our the industry of mother government, you know, there is a need to continuously recreate, redefine, remanufacture what we're doing in order to justify more tax dollar grabs,
well,
right?
Yeah, okay.
And we've seen it over and over again. And I think just last time I was on the show, I remember saying, look, you know, the school has been trying to solve what ails us, you know, whether it's drug and alcohol education, anti-smoking.
Well, that's worked. Yeah, that's worked. No, only high taxes did in cigarettes. I don't think the education did much.
Yeah, but you go drive in past any secondary school and you see a whole bunch of kids still standing out smoking.
Yeah. What do you know what they're doing? One of the issue, the major sort of physical thing they're doing with the Roots of Empathy program. Do you know what it is?
Well, I do. And this is what, you know.
Let's talk about that.
Okay, now I should say that we did invite Premier Clark to be on the show today.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Yes, but her handlers haven't let her loose on us or let us loose on her yet. And I also did call the founder of the Roots of Empathy, Mary Gordon,
and invited
her on the show, and I got a prompt reply saying she couldn't be here. She would be traveling. So I said, well, how about the next Tuesday or the next Tuesday? Because I would love to sit down and have a chat with this woman.
Well, you know, okay, I would too. I'm very interested. My mind is still, I understand all the deep issues that this is trying to deal with, and maybe it does work. Do you not think that there's some possible... No, okay, before we get into that, tell us, because it's my understanding, I've got an understanding, a very basic one, of how the Roots of Empathy program works. What's your understanding of how it works?
Well, my understanding is they introduced this program, and this appeals to people. And you know, I started looking into this because so many programs, and I often talk on the show about the CARE program, the Sex Abuse Prevention Program, Who wouldn't support that being in the schools? What a wonderful goal. Let's equip the kids to protect themselves. Parents automatically assume that teachers know what they're doing. They automatically assume that the school is being honest with them. And when they started to look at the program like I did, it was a bunch of hogwash. The program was not about prevention. It was about disclosure. It was about getting your kids to open up about what was going on in your home and with them. And they rationalized it this way. Well, if we save one child, well, of course, that program told little kids over and over again the people most likely to harm them were their fathers and their grandfathers. So the consequences of it far outweighed any good.
All right. Well, let's go into roots of empathy. And also there's the seeds of empathy,
right,
which is even for younger kids.
Well, sure, because now
what
our kindergartens are getting right down to 3 years
old.
What are they doing? What they do, Terry, is first of all, the goal is good here. Who wouldn't support
absolutely
kids, you know, learning
it's
to be kind
and considerate? Energizing
and
empathy. It's the empathetic streak that is within all of us except the most hardcore psychopaths.
We've been conditioning it out of.
Well, it's trying to rediscover it then. Let's say yes.
Okay.
Let's take it as given that the society has really screwed things up. And here's something, we're going to try to retrofix it.
Yeah.
Retrofit it.
Okay.
So
this program, what happens is they sell this to parents and to school districts and to Premier Clarks with bleeding hearts a program that, you know, is going to
I've got a phone number here. Helen is at.
Oh, great.
We've got a phone number for Helen now. Do you want to come in and get it?
All right. The joys of live shows, people. Say hi to everybody, Wayne.
Thank you.
Thanks. The program is engaging because it involves the birth of a new baby.
So they bring a baby into the classroom.
Baby into the classroom. And there's a green rug.
For many kids, it's going to be the only baby that they really get close to because there's a lot of one-child families
now.
That's another one of the issues.
Isn't that one of the problems? Yeah. I laughed at this because, you know, I looked at my oldest daughter versus my youngest because I have the four. You know, she was very involved in understanding the care of a baby and how to do that. And now that my youngest is just getting to that age where she might want to have a baby, there's already three other babies already in the family that they see continuously.
So even as the youngest, she wasn't, she didn't have younger siblings to look after,
right,
but she's got the...
As an aunt,
she's got... Oh, very interesting. Helen, are you there?
Yes, hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good.
We thought you were going to be phoning in, so...
Oh, no, anyway.
Anyway, good.
Sorry.
All right, so we've been going on here about the Roots of Empathy, Seeds of Empathy program, and, you know, looking at all the aspects of it from... there are legitimate issues out there with children who are kind of isolated, who maybe have no other siblings of their own, who have spent a couple of years in daycare and kindergarten before they get to school, all these sorts of things that our society does and encourages that actually can lead to bad outcomes. So maybe this Roots of Empathy is a response to that. And will it work? Can it hurt? Will it help? I guess most of the so-called scientific research says, hey, this is pretty good stuff. What's your take on this, Helen?
Well, what's interesting to me is that the research, most of the research purported to show that the Roots of Empathy program is effective in the long term is done by the Human Early Learning Partnership, which is the lead promoter of all-day kindergarten and child, increased daycare funding in BC, and that Mary Gordon, the woman who's the founder and head of the Roots of Empathy program, works closely with Fraser Mustard. He's on her international advisory board. And Fraser Mustard has been called the godfather of all-day kindergarten Ontario by Ontario's all-day kindergarten guru. That's Charles Pascal. So it might be an effort to kind of ameliorate some of the very heavily documented negative behavioral outcomes for increased institutional child care.
Right, yeah, actually. So, yes, we were discussing that, and that's what I said. So would your position be, hey, why don't we just cut to the chase and forget spending all the money on early child care and then all the money on trying to fix the problems of early child care and just get rid of all that early child care? Is that what you're saying?
Well, our position is always that you should fund all forms of child care equally by funding the family directly so they can choose the form of care that suits them best, including parental care.
Helen, can I just stop? Because I think that, Terry, you've just hit on one of the issues that really ticks me off about this, and that is the lack of honest dialogue as it relates to the needs of children.
Absolutely.
And when you look at this Roots of Empathy and what they're doing with this, it is nothing but a marketing sales job to try to fix the problem, because nobody wants to say, hey, wait a minute. You know, if we really want kind, considerate, well-adjusted children, then maybe we should try to create a family environment that we know is going to work best. And maybe our government programs and initiatives should work towards that end. But you know what, Terry? That doesn't create a bunch of jobs for union members. That doesn't create a bunch of requirement for tax dollars, all those other things. This is about the industry of mother government versus the needs of children, and nobody is being honest in the dialogue here.
This is the multi-armed mother government growing another arm.
Well, the research, like I looked up their research on their website, and the research they don't actually, that they mention, there's nothing published in a peer-reviewed journal that shows that this program has any benefits. The research they cite is a lecture, posters and presentations, and it's been done like 3 or 4 years ago, so they've had plenty of time to get into a peer-reviewed journal if it was solid research. Clyde Hertzman, who's the head of the Human Early Learning Partnership, HELP, and others at HELP, published it with, for Stats Canada, some information on child care, and they said, quote, pro-social scores were the lowest for children in center-based care. So that's that evidence, and other like really solid peer-reviewed evidence shows that overwhelmingly shows that there's increased negative behavior outcomes, increased cortisol, which is related to stress and the development of the brain, from this institutional care setting. And they say this is all about, you know, evidence-based research, but this isn't evidence-based research that they're following. And they you know, they talk about listening to the children. Well, you know.
Helen, let me stop you there, because one of the things that struck me the moment I laid eyes on their report on research, which is in their website, was this is the research design of Roots of Empathy, and it talks about early evaluations. Of course, it leaves out the fact that there's no peer review evaluations. And it talks about the program's effectiveness are based on the selection of two groups of children from the classrooms participating in the Roots of Empathy. What struck me about this, and they identify these two groups. These two groups are matched with respect to grade, gender, race, and ethnicity composition. They don't do one on socioeconomic, and they don't do one on family makeup.
Well, they also don't even say how many kids were in the two groups. I mean, it could have been, they don't say. I mean, normally they'll say there's 1,000 kids or there's 55 kids in the groups, but they're not actually presenting that basic information that any peer-reviewed thing would have to provide, of course.
And by the way, it's just not the the website and the official literature, Roots of Empathy. The provincial government, at the tail end of their press release issued yesterday afternoon, says evaluations have repeatedly proven that participants experience increased positive social behaviors such as sharing, helping, and including decreased rates of bullying and aggression. But there's that key word, evaluations.
Yeah, well, those are what I looked up. I read their stuff, and it's none of it's peer reviewed according to, from what they have on their website. I mean, they're claiming in this research information, they say that helping behaviors increased up to 78%, peer acceptance increased up to 74%, sharing increased up to 69%, decreased social aggression by 39%. I mean, these are pretty mega claims, miraculous claims. I mean, anything
yeah.
that would, you know.
Yeah, those are stupendous, right? And did they say over what period of time? Was this just maybe there was some beneficial outcome in the week after the program ended, but
well,
does it last? Or?
Well, they say some of it lasted up to 3 years, but they don't really specify what they're measuring after 3 years. And I mean, maybe this program actually delivered masses of benefits to a large group of children that lasted 3 years and beyond. Fine, but that would still that'd be great evidence, and it'd be a great program, and maybe it is a great program. But there's other evidence that the programs that the government is funding with like $500 million, all these the all-day kindergarten, etc., and the increase in the daycare and all that. These
right.
have been demonstrated repeatedly to increase the problem.
Right.
And
so you're saying Premier Christy Clark has made it a hallmark of her administration to be family-friendly, and as part of that, to support families, as part of that, she's putting money back into the Roots of Empathy program that the heartless previous administration cut. And you're saying if she truly wants to be family-friendly, reevaluate, look harder at all of your efforts, Christy Clark and the BC Liberal government, to promote all-day kindergarten and all-day daycare, and cut that money back and have real choice for British Columbians, so all families can be better supported to choose on their own what sort of child care they want. That's
and
what
yeah, without,
so, we'll
I mean, what
further.
We have is a coercive system. I mean, it's coercive, by that I mean bullying, where you are financially penalized, bullied, for looking after your own children. I mean, parents are punished for looking after their own children. The financial penalty is huge. All daycare is subsidized, even for wealthy people using daycare centers. The fees they pay, even if they're paying $1,200 a month, that is nowhere near the full cost. So I just
right.
question this you know, the legitimacy of their claims. And when I hear that Fraser Mustard and the Human Early Learning Partnership and the OECD and the World Bank and are directly promoting this program, that's a big red flag to me. I mean, the World Bank is not an organization noted for empathy. And Mary Gordon, she's probably, you know, a fine person in her own way, and she's got some great ideas. But, you know, school is not the only place people, in fact, it's not the best place to learn empathy. I mean, if they want to have little babies going into the classrooms, are they talking about breastfeeding? I mean, I teach kids. And I know, because I've asked them, you know, like finishing grade 12, have they ever discussed breastfeeding and the biology of that or anything about that? You know, I'm talking to girls who are in high school. Have that been even mentioned in all their biology and their human life or their sex ed and their family life programs? Not mentioned at all. I mean, this Roots of Empathy course, the expert, the person who actually does the teaching is not the mother. It's the expert who goes in 27 times, and the parent baby pair only go in 9 times.
Who are these so-called experts, Helen?
Well, I happened to hear Mary Gordon on the radio today talking to Bill Good, and she specified that they'd be people such as social workers, community nurses, or early childhood educators, or school counselors who are involved in program delivery from the government to the schools. So that's
Okay, but wait a minute. Most informed, competent parents tell their children not to talk to social workers. So what they
I felt the air go out of the room when you mentioned the word social.
You know,
worker.
which raises the question again: what is this program really about? Because
well, I would caution if a child was in that program and they use. I mean, she said very clearly that the baby is there as a what she called it, to
leverage.
It's an excuse, and they leverage that experience to get the children to talk about their own feelings and to increase their capacity to understand their own and others' feelings and to, you know, observe their own and other people's feelings and be empathetic. And
well, wait a minute. You know what? I watched a few of Mary Gordon's videos, and actually I became very, to the point of being so concerned about this that I transcribed one. But one of her other videos, she was shown reading a book about how angry this father was,
mm-hmm.
and how terrified his son was. This was on the clip. Mm-hmm. Now you tell me there's social workers in the room when this is going on?
Well, okay, and then Johnny's going to say, yeah, I mean, Daddy yelled at me sometime. I mean, it's because if the children are in that situation and they reveal some information about their family, basically any information at all that, you know, Daddy raised his voice, Mommy grabbed my hand, I mean, because I know parents are being hauled up for exactly those offenses. I've heard the social workers.
Yes.
then the child could be taken aside by the social worker, who then puts on her social worker cap, interviews the child and the parents without the parents' knowledge or consent, and the parents got social workers at the door wanting to interview everybody involved with the family. I mean, children is, I mean, people will sometimes ask me to be present when they're having these interviews. And
okay, I want to touch on something else that you raised earlier, and that was about listening to the children. And this was another aspect of this program that struck me in the note of hypocrisy, mm-hmm. because Mary Gordon...
What part of your body is that?
See these antennas?
Oh,
yeah,
see right them. Up there. Got it. Okay.
I watched Mary Gordon talk about this, and she has this very interesting demeanor where her sincerity is indisputable. I mean, she just, and perhaps she is a very good person and all those other things, but, you know, there needs to be continuity in your message, as far as I'm concerned, especially if you want to deal with my children. And one of the things that struck me about this was how all this is about the children, and we need to listen to the children. The children want to speak to us. We must listen to the children, and we must identify how they're feeling. This is about giving them the language of their feelings, and on and on. But you know what? If we're really interested in acting on the language of their feelings and listening to them, then what are we going to do with all those kids that are 3 and 4 years old who are stuck in daycare and don't want to be there? They want to be home. Are we going to listen to them, or are we going to tell them that their feelings don't matter on that front?
Well, I guess those feelings won't be reported, will they?
Oh, okay.
Because, I mean, children at that age, well, children basically up to whatever age, have no choice in the matter of schooling, where they go, when they go, who they're with, who their teachers are, what they're taught. So the whole environment is coercive. I'm not saying that's necessarily a bad thing in all situations, but to discuss all these feeling things and to pretend and to not discuss the power imbalance here, I mean, to use a baby and to use a mother to promote your educational goals, I mean, that's, to me, like, you don't use people to do other things. If the baby is there, I mean, why can't the baby be there just because it's good to have a baby around? I mean, I've had my own baby in my son's class when he was in grade seven, and I see the empathetic behavior that comes out of the kids as soon as there's a little person around. It's just, it's you know, very obvious.
Yeah, babies are designed to elicit that.
Yeah. And I don't have to do anything. I mean, just, and I'm holding him, looking after him, his brother is, and then they all this loving behavior comes out. Whereas in a normal school environment, it's so age segregated, the natural kind of empathetic behavior to younger, more vulnerable kids by the older kids is kind of cut off.
Now, there was another aspect of this, though, that started to trouble me as well, Helen, and that is when I was reading the material put out on the website, Empathy, the Roots for Empathy, and it talked about equipping kids to be concerned about even the unborn child, which, I mean, that will just, you know, that I know, shock on that front. Mm-hmm. But then there was this interesting little twist, because then they were going to talk about the unborn child in this context, a mother who is smoking. So who's the bad person now?
Well, you know how mothers are not as trustworthy as maybe experts are or something.
Well, that social worker.
Then
we're also talking about shaking baby syndrome. Now, I've raised 4 good kids, so I speak with great proven authority on this. And, you know, one of the things I always did, I mean, my kids were exposed to a lot simply because of the nature of the work that I do, but it was always done in the healthy context. It was about, you know, you take care of your body because you're going to be given birth to beautiful, healthy children. You didn't talk about and put seeds of destruction into their minds about, well, you know, those bad parents who smoke, all this. You built and encouraged and put the positive twist on things.
Well, yeah, and I mean, to talk about those issues, I mean, to very young children, I mean, that's not something that they would initiate on their own.
No.
If you want to do parent education, well, let parents choose their parent education. I mean, like when they don't talk about breastfeeding at all in their 12, 13, or whatever it is years of schooling, and they want to talk about shaken baby syndrome,
yeah.
that demonstrates to me there's a problem. I mean, I've contacted Paul Kershaw, who's one of the head guys at HELP. Does anybody in the HELP, you know, associated with HELP, study breastfeeding? And he said he'd get back to me on that, and well, that was a couple months ago.
Well, wait, Helen. I have good news for you, though, because Premier Clark also just made an announcement a week and a bit ago about $28 million program that's going to fund public health nurses to be teamed up with at-risk young mothers.
Yeah. That's definitely another health initiative. It's this whole – I mean, I know some of these teen moms, and I mean, just because you're young doesn't mean you're a total idiot. If you've got people around you supporting you, people telling you, I mean, some of the most famous mothers in history were teenagers. It's if they're taught by the social workers that they're incompetent or that message is given to them, then and that they need all this help and all this. I mean, I know one teen mom. She's 19. She's got free daycare all day for her kids. She's got respite care. I mean, the woman's a competent and friendly and good mother, but she's being told by them that she really shouldn't be there. And she's been getting a part-time job at Starbucks.
Hey, I just heard about a pregnant teen in Aldergrove area, and she was provided with midwives and the ability to give birth in a hot tub. Mm-hmm. I mean, we are all courtesy of us, Terry. Aren't we good?
Well, that's all that reduces the cost.
Was that Hugh Hefner's young paramour?
No, this one was still in school.
Crystal Harris?
Yeah, no, this is still in school.
All right.
Well, but, okay, so this program, Helen, and I think we're going to have to ask Christy Clark. I think I feel a Freedom of Information campaign coming on from my end, because I suspect that there's more to this program that's probably in the documents in exchange with the government about this. I suspect
the Human Early Learning Partnership is basically telling the government. I mean, they just adopt that they seem to be in the driver's seat as far as policy for children go. I mean, Clyde Hertzman's own research says that pro-social behavior is the lowest in children in institutional settings. So how come that's not front and center? Mm. Christy Clark told me herself that she's interviewed Gordon Neufeld, Dr. Gordon Neufeld, a number of times. He's a developmental psychologist, very respected, loved by parents, and respected and used by the school system too. And he's got a lot to say about the roots of empathy and bullying, and how come they're not going to him? Why are they going to Mary Gordon and to HELP and the World Bank and Fraser Mustard for their so-called evidence when, I mean, why are they avoiding leading people who are actually, I know for a fact that Gordon Neufeld's name has been put forward to the government numerous times to be an advisor or to them by their own MLAs too. So what's going on with that?
Well, and why are they taking $4 million more dollars on top of the 1.5 of my money and your money and Terry's money for a program? You know, and this is the other thing I was thinking. You know, why not reach out to the community, like the church community and those that are the caring community, and say, hey, would you, you know, help bring a baby into this classroom? So, you know, and bring it in every 7 days so people can just see the development here.
Well, I mean, actually, if you go any elementary school, when the kids are being dropped off at school, there's always at least one mom or dad there with a baby or a pregnant mom, you know, dropping off the older sibling. It's not like it's hard to find these people, and it's not like, you know, they don't demonstrate caring behavior. And, you know, you could even talk to the moms at the school and say, could some of you get together and come to the classes and talk about what you know about child development and help these kids be more observant about these things, and you'd have a real relationship. What you're doing is creating counterfeit community. That's what a
counterfeit
community. That's a Jacques Ellul's term. Counterfeit community.
That's a good term.
Good one. Listen, we have to run. We got started a little late, and we went beyond what we were expecting to,
okay.
But it was so fascinating. I think we could go on for another half an hour, but
We've got a lot of other guests lined up
Great.
To talk with. Helen, thank you very much for being with us tonight. You opened, I'm sure you opened our eyes tonight on a lot of different subjects, all related to this empathy, Roots of Empathy and Seeds of Empathy program. You can look up more information about it at the provincial government's website to see how they are spinning it, and then do some searching online and see what you come up with. Thank you, Helen.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, great.
Good night.
That was Helen Ward, of President of Kids First Canada.